Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality, with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution, but all too often we don't think enough about them. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit my website, you can ask additional questions, even about past shows. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I'm also launching a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which will be available on iHeart starting sometime in September. Aspects of Spirituality will be addressing numerous spiritual topics in short weekly podcasts. As part of our understanding of our spirituality, we need to better understand both how our body works as well as how we can make it work better. There are a number of healing techniques which mainstream medicine considers to be alternative medicines, like acupuncture. And I found some of them to be very effective on specific conditions. Reiki is one of these alternative medicines, and it's the topic of today's show. Our guest is Penelope Quest, a Reiki master and author of Reiki for Life, the complete guide to Reiki practice for levels 1, 2, and 3. She has been practicing Reiki since 1994 and has been a Reiki consultant to both the Open University and the UK National Health Service. Penny was the Education and Accreditation Committee on Reiki Regulatory Working Group, responsible for producing an acceptable core curriculum for Reiki practitioner training. Her previous books include The Reiki Manual, the Basics of Reiki, and Living the Reiki Life. Welcome to the show, Penny.
Thank you, Dave.
Hey, it's great to have you here. To start out, let's start out by saying, you know, telling the listeners, what is Reiki?
Well, Reiki is actually the name given to an energy. Although what we tend to consider in the West is that it's a hands-on healing method, which was instituted by a Buddhist priest called Mikao Yasui in Japan in the 1920s. It didn't come to the West until 1938, but it's now spread all around the world as a healing method. And it's a healing method that can be taught quite easily in a weekend course. That's one of the things that makes it unique.
So what does it heal? What type of injuries or diseases or whatever? What does it heal?
Well, it can heal anything. The thing is, it's a holistic therapy. And that means it doesn't just work on the body. It also works on the mind, on the emotions, and on the spirit. So sometimes an illness might need to be treated first from an emotional aspect. And Reiki is guided, if you like, by a universe or God or whatever you would like to call it, so that it travels to the areas in that person that need it the most. And as I said, that might be emotions first. And so it might take a little while before it acts on a physical symptom, or it might act on the physical symptom straight away. Unfortunately, we never know. It would be great if we did know, but we don't know how it's going to work.
I mean, that's kind of amazing. You work on something. Say you have a bad wrist. So you put some energy into that wrist, and what you're saying is there may be more serious problems going on inside the body, and that energy will address those first.
Yes, that's basically the case.
Rather amazing, isn't it?
Well, it is, but the thing is, it's a very simple thing to do. I mean, I taught it for over 20 years, and I've taught thousands of practitioners and about 60 Reiki masters. Reiki master is the name given to somebody who teaches Reiki. And so, and I have been a practitioner, although not recently, and I've had many cases which have resulted in the person becoming better. But it does depend very much on what state they are in, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally and spiritually.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it depends on whether they are ready to be healed. Now, that might seem a very contentious statement, but we do have to be ready to get better.
Now, is that the spiritual aspect of it? When you say it helps us, you know, it can heal spiritually. How does it do that?
Well, how does it do it? Now, how can I describe that? Basically, Reiki will flow into the whole person. And you may not have heard this phrase before, but basically we are spirit having a physical experience. No, my throat just got dry. Where was I?
You were saying that we're eternal spirits having a life experience, and I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, we are spirit having a physical experience, not physical bodies having a spiritual experience.
Exactly.
So all of us is actually spirit. We are energy, all of us. And we're energy vibrating at a low enough rate that we become physical. We're used to energies that we can't see. I mean, the energy that we're using at the moment, we can't actually see it.
Right.
I can see a picture of you on the screen, but I don't see the connection, do I?
So what you're saying is that the energy that comes in from Reiki addresses other aspects of our energy system. And that's the spiritual healing that you're talking about.
Yes. Reiki is a form of spiritual healing. Yes, it is.
The whole thing. No matter what it's healing, it's really, I mean, we're spiritual beings, so that's what it's healing.
Yeah. But it can also work on us in terms of our psychology and our emotions. Let me give you a few items that might help to understand that. If somebody has a throat problem, like I'm having at the moment, unfortunately, now they may be having trouble with communication issues. And so that manifests as a throat problem. Or maybe they've got a problem with their lower back, and that's seen as being a security issue, particularly with the lower back, perhaps financial security, and that might need to be addressed first, or at least their feelings about it. I'm not suggesting that Reiki can solve your financial problems. That would be great, but it doesn't happen.
Right. Okay. So you'd have to address that first. You say, hey, I'm worried about something. I got this emotional block in me. And so what you'd want to do is you'd want to deal with that particular issue before you went and start working on your throat or your arm or whatever.
Well, yes and no. I mean, if somebody goes for a Reiki treatment, then the practitioner will place their hands, generally speaking, in about 12 different positions, but non-intrusive, and the person remains fully clothed. And wherever the hands are placed, Reiki energy will flow in. And it will then flow around the whole of the energy system, so within the physical body and also outside the body in the aura. But it will go to those aspects that need healing the most. Now, I'm not suggesting that if somebody has a bad wrist, that it might need a lot of treatment. It probably won't. It probably would only need perhaps one treatment. And the person needs to ask themselves eventually, well, you know, why have I got this wrist? Bad wrist. You know, what's going on in my life? What can't I handle? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. Now, do you have to believe that it's going to work, or doesn't belief have anything to do with it?
Belief doesn't have anything to do with it. On many occasions, I've done demonstrations by just placing my hands on somebody's shoulders, somebody who thinks it's a whole load of rubbish. And it's lovely to watch their expression on their face when they can actually feel something happening. It's brilliant. Great fun.
That sounds good. How about if somebody came in and they really didn't want to be healed? You know, they kind of got dragged in by a friend or a spouse, and they've been using whatever was wrong with them as an excuse not to do things. And they come in here to you, and you say, okay, I'm going to heal you. But they don't really want to be healed. What happens then?
Well, it's not a conscious decision. Reiki will flow into that person if it is the right thing to happen. If it isn't the right thing, if there is some reason, and we often wouldn't know what that is, why the person doesn't want to be healed, then really nothing much happens. It's completely up to that person's higher self, their spiritual self.
How does this energy differ from acupuncture? You know, acupuncture draws in energy, which they call it, I guess, qi or chi. Is this the same energy, or is it different energy, or don't we really know?
No, it's not. Yes and no. I'm sorry, that's a very silly answer. But basically, acupuncture works on the person's energy meridians within the whole body. As I understand it, they don't transfer energy into the body. They use the body's own energies. Is that your understanding?
That's not my understanding, but that doesn't mean it's not correct.
Right.
Because I've taken, you know, I've gone to acupuncture. I've had huge success with acupuncture. But in all reality, I don't have a clue how it works. You know, they explain it to me and they tell me this stuff and I read books on it and I still don't get it. But I do know that it works.
Well, basically all complementary therapies are working on the energy system, not on the conventional physical body.
Right.
So, does that help at all? I mean, whether you're having reflexology or an aromatherapy massage or acupuncture or you're having a shiatsu treatment, all of those are actually working on your energy system, because it's the energy system that helps us to keep alive, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Let's. In your book, you mentioned that we have three levels of consciousness, which most people understand: a superconscious, a conscious self, and a subconscious. How does Reiki interface with those? Why did you mention them in the
book? Why did I mention them in the book? I'm now beginning to wonder, because you've asked me the question. The superconscious and the conscious and the subconscious are all aspects of our psychology. And so Reiki can work within our mindset, the mind-body connection. And those aspects of our psychology can be penetrated by Reiki. Reiki is such a fine vibrational energy that it can flow into anything, and therefore it can flow into our subconscious so that it can help us to rethink things. It can flow into our ego, and it will help us to perhaps be less egotistical about something. It's just an amazing energy that is capable of doing all sorts of things.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. Now, when people go to learn about it, you mentioned in the book that it's experience based, not knowledge based. And you know, when I think of that, I think of, and I relate it back to acupuncture, where you have to know, or at least I think you have to know, where the meridians are and exactly where to put the needles in order to have the energy flow where you want it to flow.
Correct.
But that doesn't seem to be the case. So when you say experience-based versus knowledge-based, explain what you mean by that.
Right. Well, when you go on a Reiki course in order to be able to learn how to do this, then there's very little that you actually have to learn. You don't need a lot of knowledge about physiology or anatomy. You don't need to know where the energy centers in the body are, although usually you are told about that on the course. Because basically wherever somebody who's been trained in Reiki places their hands, that's where the Reiki flows into that person's body, either their own body, because you can do self-healing with Reiki, or a client or a friend or relative. But when I say it's experiential, it's basically, you can't learn Reiki by reading a book. You can only acquire the ability to channel Reiki into yourself, this Reiki energy, by going through an attunement process with a qualified Reiki master, where the Reiki master transfers the ability to access the Reiki energy. So that's why it's experience-based. It's not knowledge-based. You don't have to go and learn lots of stuff.
Yeah, okay. Now you talk about attunement, and one of the things that you have to learn, or maybe it's not so much learning, but it's a process you have to go through when you're being trained to do Reiki, is an attunement. What is that about?
Well, you see, I can't tell you because you're not a Reiki master.
Okay.
So I can't tell you how to do that. Basically, it is a process which was originated in Japan in the 1920s to enable someone who doesn't necessarily have the 50 years of spiritual experience which Dr. Yasui had, who was the founder of Reiki. So it's a process by which the energy can be transferred from a Reiki master into the person. It's a ceremony. Put it that way. It's a ceremony that they go through to enable that person to be able individually to channel Reiki themselves.
But are you actually changing the individual? Are you opening something that allows the energy to come in?
Yes, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's some physical thing that takes place with the new individual who's being trained, and so you're changing his energy field somehow or another.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Does it stay? I assume you're opening.
Yes.
Does it stay open?
No, you close the. You close the energy field at the end of the ceremony because you don't want to leave somebody open energetically all the time, because they would then become hypersensitive to everybody's energies around them, and they wouldn't be able to walk down the street without accessing lots of energy from other people. So you don't leave them open. But the ability for themselves to decide to allow the Reiki energy in, that's up to them, and they can do that for the rest of their lives. Once they've been attuned to the Reiki energy, attuning means basically you come into the same vibrational frequency as the Reiki energy. That's what that really means.
Okay.
But they have the ability then, once they've gone through an attunement, to be able to use Reiki for the rest of their lives. It doesn't wear off and it doesn't wear out. And there's an inexhaustible supply of the energy. So it's pretty good, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is pretty good. Now there are three levels, which your book said, that you can go, and I guess this is various levels of training. What are these three levels?
Well, the first level is the basic level where you go through either one or four attunement processes, ceremonies. Depends on the lineage of your Reiki master as to how they do that, whether it's one or four. I'm a very traditional Reiki master, so I always did four, which was the way they did it in Japan. So on that first level, you are then able to access the Reiki energy, and you're taught how to give yourself a treatment, how to give another person a treatment. So that's the first level. And for some people, that's all they ever need. But if they want to take it further, they can go on to level two. And at level two, you are taught three symbols. Now, that they're shapes, basically, that again come from the spiritual aspects in Japan. And they access the energy differently. Now, there is a bit of learning about that. You do have to learn the shapes.
Right.
And they're called the power symbol, the harmony symbol, and the distance symbol. Those are the three symbols that you learn. And they enable you to be even more effective in the way that you use Reiki. I mean, for example, the power symbol, as its name would imply, allows you to access even more Reiki. The harmony symbol can be used when you want to bring harmony and peace to a situation or into a person's body if they're having a fever or something like that. And the distance symbol enables you to send Reiki anywhere at a distance with exactly the same effectiveness as if you're with the person.
That's somewhat amazing. Do you do this over a phone, or you just think? You say, I'm thinking about this person, and this is what I want to send them.
No, you don't need to do it over a phone, not even an iPhone. No.
Isn't there a Reiki app on the iPhone? I'm kidding.
I don't think so. Who knows? Could come next, couldn't it? It is just a thought process, but you are taught how to send a distance treatment by using the three symbols that I've just described, but you don't do it indiscriminately. You make an appointment. Like if you were going to have a Reiki treatment, you'd make an appointment with a practitioner. If you're going to have a distant treatment, the practitioner also needs to make an appointment so that you're not up a ladder or on a roof when you're about to receive this distant treatment.
You have to get, both people have to be involved in this treatment at the same time.
Yeah, yes. Although you can program the treatment, which I know that's an even more difficult thing to understand, but just like you could program your a DVD player or something like that, you can also program the treatment to go at the time you specify.
And both parties need to know about the time.
Yes, they do. Yes.
Okay. Let's go back for a minute to the symbols, because I didn't totally get them. The symbols, let's say the power symbol. This is some symbol, and we won't try to define what it is now. You mention it. You show it in the book. But what you would do then, and for the symbol, is you move your hands in the shape of this symbol. Is that how it works?
Yes, that's generally how you're taught, to move your hand in the shape of each of the symbols that you're going to be using. And each symbol has a mantra, which you are also taught, So that you say the mantra three times as you use the symbol. And it sounds complicated, but actually you find that it's very simple once you've got used to it.
What does the mantra do for you?
How can I describe it? It basically works with the symbol, with the shape. When Dr. Yasui was training people in the 1920s in Japan, of course, he was training people who had, in general, quite a lot of spiritual background. They would be Buddhists, although he also taught some Christians. But, of course, Christianity had been banned in Japan for quite a long time, so there weren't that many of them. And he got people to actually use the mantra sounds that they could make, and that would access the energy. However, he found that some people weren't willing to put in the time and effort to do that on a daily basis, and so he got them to draw the symbols as well as saying the mantras. Does that help? That makes sense?
I don't really understand how it works, but I understand the process that you're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So if somebody wanted to go, it's one thing to just, and I assume, I live around the Boston area, I assume that there are Reiki masters or second level people in a lot of different places. So you would find these people by going on the internet, looking for them. Would that be a problem?
Well, I think certainly that's how people find them now. There are a number of international organizations, and I do actually give details of those organizations in the back of my book, so that anyone in any country can usually find a Reiki practitioner if they want to have a treatment, or a Reiki master if they want to be trained in Reiki. I mean, some Reiki masters are also practitioners. So you can find them, but the internet is probably the easiest way. And you just Google, if Google is the search engine of choice, you would just Google Reiki and then the town or city that you're in. And usually it will come up with some people.
Okay. Now, how long does a session take? If you didn't want to be trained, but you just wanted to go be treated, is it like an hour or what is it?
Yeah, it's usually an hour. Simply because most complementary therapies are one-hour treatments, so a Reiki treatment is as well.
Okay.
And each of the... There are 12 hand positions. Would it help if I describe the hand positions?
You probably would.
Okay. Well, you would start with... the practitioner uses both hands, and there's no pressure, there's no manipulation. It's very gentle. They just place their hands. Yet generally at the back of a person's head to start with for 5 minutes. And then they would go perhaps to the ears or the temples for 5 minutes, and then place their hands gently over the eyes, but not touching the eyes. Obviously, they curve their hands so they don't touch the eyes themselves. And then either side of the neck, you have to be very careful, obviously. You don't place your hand at the front of somebody's throat because they're going to think they're going to be choked. So that's not a good idea. So either side of the neck, and then the upper chest. It's a little easier on gentlemen than on ladies, because you do have to avoid the breasts. And then it's hand placement, both hands on the solar plexus, and then round about where the navel is, and then roughly where the body joins the thighs. And then you do the back, and that's the shoulders and the middle of the back. Obviously, you get a person to turn over if they're lying on a therapy couch. and then the back of the waist, and then the buttocks. But as I explained, there are no intrusive positions. And even if somebody, for example, if a lady has breast cancer, you never need to actually touch the breasts because the Reiki will flow into wherever it's needed. And also the client remains fully clothed. We do usually ask them to take their shoes and coat off, but the rest of the clothes can stay on.
Now, do you need to touch any of the body? Or will the Reiki flow into it if your hand is, I don't know, half inch, quarter inch off of the body?
It does flow in if the hand is above the body. And there are now quite a lot of Reiki masters who teach it like that. But traditionally, certainly in Japan, it was a hands-on healing method. So, and it to be fair, holding your hands above somebody's body is jolly tiring. It's much, much easier to just place your hands very gently on the body.
So this is a practical aspect of it. Put your hand on somebody's shoulder or head.
Yes, indeed.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn how to be a practitioner or learn how to do it themselves, first degree, what would that benefit? What could they do for themselves that Reiki would allow them to do?
Well, basically, they would be taught how to give themselves a Reiki treatment because the Reiki, it flows into them through the crown of their head, and then it flows around the whole of the system and out of their hands. So they can place their own hands on their own body and let the Reiki flow into them. In the hand positions that I've just described to you. That's a classic way of doing it. But they can also do what I would call, say, emergency treatment. And you mentioned somebody with a bad wrist. Say you've got a sore wrist. You can place your other hand on the wrist and give yourself Reiki. Or if you've got a headache, you don't need to go through all the 12 hand positions. You can place your hands on the head wherever it hurts. Or if you bang your knee, you can give your knee some Reiki. And that would be 5 to 10 minutes, not usually that much more, but it doesn't matter. You can actually leave your hands on your body as long as you like and let the Reiki flow. You can give yourself Reiki while you're watching TV. You don't have to concentrate. It's not as though you have to say, let the Reiki heal me, let the Reiki heal me, let the Reiki heal me all the way through a treatment. That would be dreadfully tiring, wouldn't it?
It would.
So you just, once you have decided to let the Reiki flow into you, you can give yourself a self-treatment in any way that you like. But you can also treat situations. So, for example, say you've got a problem with colleagues at work. You could write the problem down on a piece of paper and then Reiki that piece of paper between your hands and let the Reiki flow into that situation. And you can't guarantee what the outcome will be, but very often things begin to improve.
Now, how in the world would that work? Would that energy end up going into you and you would address it differently? It doesn't go into the people you're working with, does it?
Yeah, it does.
Does it?
Yeah. Yes, it certainly can do, but only on, not on a physical level. When you're treating a situation, say you had two colleagues that you were having trouble with, and you'd write on a piece of paper, let Reiki flow into the situation between Joe, Fred, and me for our greatest and highest good. And you'd write that on a piece of paper. And you'd Reiki it for 5 or 10 minutes a day, just allowing the Reiki to flow into the situation. So you're not directly letting Reiki flow into those people, but they can become influenced by the healing of the Reiki. And I know that's quite a difficult concept, but I don't know how better to explain it, really.
Okay. Headaches, you mentioned a minute ago. You know, a lot of people have headaches. They get migraine. They live with these things, all these really difficult things.
Yeah.
Sinus headaches and such like that. Reiki will deal with these headaches effectively.
It certainly can do. But like I said, you can never guarantee how it's going to work. With most simple headaches, and I wouldn't describe migraine as a simple headache, but most simple headaches can often be tension-based. And those headaches, generally, Reiki can deal with quite quickly. I would always say to a client who was having headaches regularly, well, quite honestly, you need to get that checked out by a qualified medical practitioner, not just somebody doing Reiki. I mean, what we call a GP, a general practitioner, a doctor. One of the things that Reiki does seem to be able to do is to bring to our consciousness the cause. Now, again, if you're looking at it from a metaphysical perspective, somebody who keeps getting headaches, what is it in their life that is a headache to them? Do you see what I mean? There's usually a cause. And it might, of course, be a physical cause. It could be that they're very tense, they've been sitting too long at a computer, and the muscles in their neck are causing the headache. But it could also be an emotional problem. It could be a psychological problem. It could be stress. It could be lots of different things. And usually, in order to make healing permanent, you have to change something about your life. So it's not, well, people go to a doctor usually to perhaps get pills or something like that because they don't really want to do anything about their medical condition. But generally speaking, a lot of the illnesses that we suffer from are lifestyle based. And you sometimes need to change things in your life. For example, if somebody is getting a lot of coughs, but they smoke regularly, well, there's a fairly simple answer there. You know, if you give up the smoking, perhaps the cough would go away. Yeah. And that's a very simplistic way of looking at it. But that's sometimes Reiki will help you to reach a conclusion that perhaps you could change this or you should do that.
Well, certainly modern medicine, accepted medicine, certainly does encourage lifestyle changes, diet changes, exercise changes. There's all kinds of things that they'll tell you, hey, this might have caused it, and, you know, don't do this or don't do that. So
yeah.
So it's not unexpected that
no.
Reiki would do the same thing.
No, indeed.
Yeah. Now, one of the things in the book you mentioned in your first degree, you know, if somebody learned the first degree level, that you could improve your sleep, you could get a quick energy burst, or I guess you give yourself full treatment. But you know, those are beneficial things. I mean, sleep is a high priority, and if you could have an ability to sleep better, especially if it was significantly better, that'd help a lot of people. Just
absolutely. Yes, it would. And I mean, I have to say that for most people, if you give yourself a self-treatment, so you've been on a Reiki course and you've done Reiki 1, and if you give yourself Reiki when you're lying in bed at night, I rarely got beyond hand position number 4 before I was asleep.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it does seem to create deep relaxation. And of course, deep relaxation is the state that you need to be in order to go to sleep most effectively. So it can help people to sleep, definitely.
Now if you wanted to take a course, you mentioned in the book that you know, the each level that you would go to is about a weekend type of thing, a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday evening, Saturday, Sunday. So this is not a huge time dependent type of thing. If you wanted to get into it, you could
It's very simple. It's very easy. I always recommend a 2-day course because that helps, you know, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. Uh-huh. I mean, I used to run a Friday evening as well, but most Reiki masters don't. But a Saturday and a Sunday, because that gives you time to actually practice on your fellow participants in the course, supervised by the Reiki master, and that gives you confidence. There are quite a lot of Reiki masters who teach Reiki in one day, but obviously you don't get in as much time to learn the basics and practice the basics, but it works just as well. So whether you go on a 1-day or a 2-day course, you'll come out of it being able to do Reiki.
Okay. And you can do that on your family and friends.
Yeah.
It's not just you. It's not just self-doing. At
level 1,
you can do it on other people, but you don't go sell your time yet.
You wouldn't normally set yourself up as a Reiki practitioner if you'd just done Reiki 1 a few weekends ago. But yes, you can work on friends and family. You can work on your pets as well. It works very well on animals.
Yeah, that was interesting that you mentioned that. And I guess there's no reason why not.
No. There are more rules and regulations about treating animals on a professional basis than there are treating humans, believe it or not. Before you start treating other people's animals, you have to make sure you've advised them to see a veterinarian. But you can treat your own animals, horses, farm animals, you know, any animal. But obviously, if it's a dangerous animal, then you treat it in the cage. You just hold your hands either side of the cage. You don't actually hold on to the animal. That would be a bad idea.
That would be a bad idea.
It would.
How about, are there things to worry about? You know, your first degree, you're just, you know, you spent a weekend. What happens, you know, what happens if you dealt with somebody that was doing chemotherapy or radiation or something? Are there times that you don't want to do it?
Very few, very few. Basically, if you are just using Reiki, in other words, you're not using it in combination with other practices, like you're not using it whilst you're also doing acupuncture, or you're not doing it whilst you're also doing aromatherapy. So you're just using Reiki, then the idea is that it's not harmful in any way. So you can't do any harm by doing Reiki.
Now, when you say that, let me make sure I understand that. I go to a acupuncturist, and he gives me a treatment, and then I leave the acupuncturist. Now I'm not doing acupuncture anymore, but it takes maybe 2 days for all of that energy to work its way through.
Indeed.
During those 2 days is what you're saying. You don't want to do Reiki at the same time.
No, that's not what I meant, because you could certainly have a Reiki treatment the day after you have an acupuncture treatment, but you might not need it.
Okay, so when you say at the same time, you literally mean at the same time.
The practitioner is doing Reiki at the same time as they're doing reflexology, or at the same time as they're doing an aromatherapy massage. They're letting the Reiki flow at the same time.
Okay. Now, you also said in the book, which I found kind of amazing, is that it works on inanimate objects. You know,
yes.
Like computers and washing machines.
Yeah, it does. And I know that stretches the imagination a lot. I understand that. But myself and many of my students have had great success. I mean, I got an old dishwasher to work again by using Reiki. I was sitting next to one of my students, and she had her mobile phone in between the two of us, and it started to charge up. Now, that's fascinating, isn't it? And I had a computer that that crashed, and I didn't quite know what to do. But my son had actually given me the instructions to rebuild this thing, and I thought, I can't do that. I'm not technological enough. So I just treated it with Reiki. And a message came up on the screen telling me what was wrong, and then it crashed again. So at least I was able to tell somebody what was wrong with it. I know, it's just amazing. But you see, everything is energy. Every inanimate object started as natural things that have just been put together. I mean, like plastic, you know, comes from oil and stuff like that. But everything is energy.
It's all energy. It's all energy.
It's all energy. Yeah.
And this is just a higher frequency, I guess, energy that's able to get in and help the lower frequency.
Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly it.
And you also mentioned that it can work in world situations.
Yes, there are many of us who send Reiki to world situations. For example, there have been dreadful earthquakes in Italy, and I've certainly been sending distant Reiki to that situation, to all of the people affected. The more people who can do that, the better, really.
You know, Penny, we have a couple of flawed presidential candidates over here. Have you ever considered trying to help some of that situation?
I'm gritting my teeth at the moment. Basically, no. No, okay. I think there are many of us worldwide who are a little bit worried.
You mention in the book, and we're about to run out of time here, you have Reiki principles, and there's five of them that you get.
That's right.
What are the Reiki principles?
The Reiki principles are ways of living life well. It's things like do not anger, do not worry, do your work honestly, be kind to every living creature, and
honor parents,
and have gratitude, and those were things which the emperor in Japan, when Yasui was alive, used to use. But they actually are even older than that. They go back several thousand years, they're just principles for good living. And he was trying to make sure that his students, and he taught about 2,000 students, that his students were able to live a happier and better life, and he felt that those principles were the ways of doing so.
I can agree with that. We have pretty much run out of time. Can you tell the listeners what you're doing these days, and how they can find you? And
Indeed. I have a website, which is www.reiki, that's reiki-quest.co.uk. And I put various things on there about what I'm doing, and there's obviously plenty of information about my books and about Reiki itself. So that's the best way, and people can email me questions and things. I get questions.
Well, hey, thank you very much for being on the show, Penny. It was great to have you, and I appreciate you coming.
Well, thank you. It's really good to meet you by Skype, and hopefully we'll perhaps chat again sometime.
Okay, sounds good. Take care, Penny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and past shows are posted on my website at davidgagan.com. If you want to investigate spirituality in more detail, I cover many spiritual subjects in my book, The Endless Journey. Also, please join me on iHeartRadio at Aspects of Spirituality. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.